This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and life situations. And now today's podcast.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you become an above-average investor. And I welcome you to this two-way forum. This is a place where certainly I can talk to myself and to you guys for an hour, but I like to hear what's on your mind. I want to hear your questions, your ideas as well. Now, obviously, since you're spending time with us this hour, managing your money must be one of your top priorities, and priorities in life are really everything, and financial needs are near the top of everyone's list. However, most people, their busy lives don't allow them to give as much attention as they probably like. So if you feel that same way, you're not alone. So we need to make the most of our time together, and that's why this is a two-way conversation, because I have topics that I want to discuss, but the best way for me to help you guys is to hear what is on your mind. So today we're going to spend a few minutes during the hour talking about following the herd, how you don't need to chase the lemmings over the cliff, and we're going to talk about 5 points to ponder before buying those hot stocks. It's one of our talking points today, and of course, I welcome your call about any money topics. 888-99-CHART is the number. We'll get to the phones in a moment or two. Now, I hear many people who refer to throwing money at the stock market as gambling. And I can understand that thought process, because to most people, it's kind of a mystery of how stocks move up and down. However, markets always move for a reason. And prices of assets do not change at random. They move with a purpose. However, if investors are not attuned with the markets and don't understand the moves, it can feel like gambling. Feel like, okay, I throw money here and some of it goes up. I throw money here, some of it goes down. But it takes a lot of knowledge and experience to really unravel the mysteries of the market. Or even those that have the best knowledge and most experience can be wrong. So it's not like you, if you unravel the mystery, you know exactly what's going to happen. You just understand what is happening and are able to make more educated decisions. Investing is about playing the odds. But unlike in a casino, you can put the odds in your favor. To do this, you must have good data, be able to analyze it well in order to calculate those odds. So if someone looks at one factor as a reason to buy something, then they're probably gambling because they're not looking at enough information to put the odds in their favor. Good investments have many factors that line up to create an attractive opportunity. And the average investor only pays attention to the narrative behind the company's business or recent performance of the company's stock. They just look at, how did it do this last month or year or 3 years? Or they buy into the story of why this company is great. And this is where they tend to get in trouble. Is they pin themselves to one reason why they're buying the company. Now, good investment plays take time to uncover. You can't sit down for 5 minutes and think that'll be enough to fully understand what you're looking at, what you're analyzing. There are dozens of data points that must be analyzed and weighed to make sure that you get a full view of the fundamentals of the company you're analyzing, along with its competitors, its industry, where that fits in the current economic environment as well. You have to be cognizant of the company's business model, how the economic ebbs and flows will affect their profits. Then you need to be able to read the chart to decipher what the market is telling you about the stock. And ultimately, that should be the final arbiter that will give you an indication whether you should buy or sell. So if you can combine everything you've learned and be patient for the right opportunities, you can put the odds in your favor. Now, if you rush into a trade without thoroughly analyzing all the relevant information, you're likely going to put the odds in the house's favor, not in yours. See, that's the difference. With the markets, you can put the odds in your favor. You can be the house. But you have to stay disciplined and you have to do the work. But if you do that, you will be profitable. So that's what we're here to do. We're here to help you put the odds in your favor. Help you become the house so that while you're not always going to win, nobody ever wins. The house doesn't always win, right? At the casino. But over time, they tend to come out ahead on a consistent basis. So that's what we wanted to help you do, is come out ahead on a consistent basis. And that's what we try to do with our clients as well. So what money questions have you been saving up for? Our listener line is open at 888-99-CHART. That's our anytime line. We are live 4 to 5 Pacific time. Now let's take this question that came in before today's program.
Hi, Steve or Justin. This is Jacob from Champaign, Illinois. I was calling about a question about online broker. I was hoping to short some stocks, but it says I can only do that if I have a margin account, and I do not have a margin account at the moment. I was hoping you could talk about margin accounts and pros and cons of those, so that way I can get started short some stocks. Thanks for your help. Bye.
Well, you need to fill out some paperwork, and there's a little bit extra paperwork that usually needs to happen with a margin account at a broker, and pretty much every broker allows you to set up one. The cons are, obviously, you're borrowing money, there's risks in shorting, there's risks in leveraging your account, which is, you know, if you're going on margin, that's what happens. You can usually borrow up to 50% of your account, so certainly that will increase the risk if you do that. So yeah, I mean, that's the risk. There's no real risk beyond that. I mean, most of our clients' accounts that are not IRAs, I mean, tax-deferred accounts, they are margin accounts, but we rarely use margin, but it's nice to have it there for short periods if you want to use it or need it. So I see no reason why you shouldn't have one. There's no cost if we're not using the margin, but there is cost when you do use the margin, and that varies by broker, and you need to know, you know, you have to ask them what that exactly, those costs exactly are. Hope that helped. 888-99-CHART. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein. Leasing a car versus buying one. Are annuities ever a good idea? What about a credit union versus a bank? Converting a regular IRA to a Roth? What type of professional advisor is best to help you plan your retirement? Should you rent your home or buy a home? These are all questions we can discuss. I love broad questions that give everyone as much insight as we can, as opposed to individual stocks, but we can do individual stocks as well. So whatever's on your mind, let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART is how I get through right now.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Give us a call. Get your question in as soon as possible. Now, 5 points to ponder before buying those hot stocks. It's one of our main talking points today. I also want to touch on a few other things. One is the Treasury curve is flattening. What does that mean? Is that positive or negative? Okay. Also, I didn't get to this yesterday. Do you need to pay off your mortgage before you retire? So some pros and the cons, but hopefully we'll get to that. And then lastly, what percentage of your salary do you need to save? It's a tough question, but hopefully we can give you some sense of how to think about it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show.
David Berkeley, how you doing, David?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling.
My question has to do with the fact that my son is getting married in December, and to pay for my part of the wedding, I need to generate some liquid cash.
Okay.
And I was thinking of one of two ways to do that. One is I have a Roth IRA, which I have about $85,000.
Okay.
I also have a couple of index mutual funds that I would have to sell to get the cash.
Okay.
That I would have to pay some capital gains.
Uh-huh.
I was wondering which might be the better way to go to generate that cash.
Let me ask you how old you are, David.
I'm 63.
Okay, so are you able to take money out of that Roth without any tax consequences?
I am. It's been over 5 years.
Okay. I'm really opposed to paying taxes wherever possible.
Okay, yes.
If you have no other sources, and those are the only two choices you're giving me, I would go with the Roth. And I'd rather see you stay in at least for the next 3 months. I would wait as long as I can, even in the Roth. You want to just play the odds and see if you can get a little bit extra growth out of it. And I'd take it out of the Roth just because of the tax issues.
Okay.
Okay?
Very helpful.
Thanks, David.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call.
Let's go to Jay in Fremont. How are you doing, Jay?
Hi, Justin. I'm doing fine. Thank you. How are you?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
Just a general question. What do you think about buying the digital currency? Like Bitcoin is very high, but there are other currencies which are still not that high. But I'm not sure. I'm reading that they might be, going up in long term. So what do you think about those? Thank you.
No problem. I'm not a big believer in the digital currencies, mainly because there's problems with security. What pushback will governments have eventually against these things, which I think there will come a point where they push back. Could they continue higher in the near term? Sure, possibly, but I see no value in them long term. Now, I do see value in the technology, the blockchain technology behind digital currencies. So I believe in that technology. I think disintermediation of transactions makes a lot of sense, and there are a lot of applications, and there's currently companies utilizing or coming out with products that utilize blockchain technology. So I do believe in that, but I don't think digital currency is something that we're going to be using in the long term. To me, I'm a bigger fan of nature's Bitcoin, shall we say, and which would be gold, which is something harder to be hacked. I think eventually one day we'll go back to a gold-backed currency. When that is, I'm not sure. I understand the basis behind digital currencies and the thought process of trying to get the creation of money out of the hands of central bankers, who have been very reckless with money printing over the past decade or so. So I get it. But I'm a third of Bitcoin exchanges have been hacked in the past, right? And as the value of these things get higher and higher, the hackers are going to try to get into these even more and more and more. So I'm not a fan of digital currencies. I think it's a symptom of the tech bubble we're in, the excess liquidity that the government or the Federal Reserve has created. But I don't think it has lasting staying power. But I get the reason why it has risen from the ash. Well, that's in the ashes, but from nothing over the past 5 years or so. All right, well, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. I'm glad you are investing this hour with us. Tom in San Jose, hold on. We'll get to your question right after the break. Let's hear your voice. I want to hear from you. Our anytime listener line is open. Once again, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278.
Coming up on Invest Talk, answers to your questions, any money matter, comparing load and no load mutual funds, how to gauge your needs in retirement, 888-99-CHART. You're
listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Let's go to Peter in Anaheim. How you doing, Peter?
Good. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing good. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for taking my call. My question is about how to find out whether the institution is buying by looking at the level 2 time and sell window.
Okay. This is how you do it. I don't know if you have the time, Peter, but if you're looking at an individual stock that you're considering, if you watch it for a few days on level 2, and everybody else, level 2, you get to see the buys and sells, you get to see the offers and the bids, you get to see how big they are, and you get to see them click off. In other words, the selling and buying of the stock. So you get to know the size of the trade, the price movement of the trade, and how deep the level is, because level 2 takes you all the way down to all those people that are offering bids and asks, down deep. You know, I'm bidding $10, another guy's bidding $9.95, another guy $9.90, and you get to see their sizes. So, Peter, what you want to look for is what we call block trading. In other words, you'll see, you're looking at a company and it trades 500, 1,000, 200 shares, 150, 500 shares, and then you see a block of 10,000 shares trade. And then 5 minutes later, another block of 10,000 shares traded, either bought or sold. I can't tell you which, it doesn't matter which direction. Whether the price is going up or down, doesn't matter. I'm just trying to point out, watch for those big block trades. And Peter, that's when you know that institutions are either dumping the stock or buying the stock. Because you'll see the sell of a 10,000 at a lower price. They're willing to take a lower price. There's people, someone's dumping the stock. If you see it at a higher price, someone is gathering the stock, accumulating. That's the only way that you can tell recently, I mean right now, whether someone is buying or some institution are buying and selling. Because if you wait for a month and or a month and a half and get the report on the number of shares traded and all that stuff, well, then, you know, it's kind of too late.
So the transaction price is higher or lower relative to the bid and the ask?
Yep,
or
exactly. You'll see, like, all of a sudden a 10,000 bid or a 10,000 ask will come in. And that tells you if they're dumping or buying. So you want to look for the action. Look for the action on the block trading, the big blocks. And you only do that if the stocks usually trades at 500 or 1,000. Some stocks trade at 10,000 and 30,000 shares normally. You're looking for that. If it's normally 10 to 20,000 shares traded, look for that 50,000 share block. If it's normally 100 to 500 shares traded, look for that 5,000 share block. You see how that works?
Oh, I see. Because how about dark pool? Is it the transactions in the dark pool are recorded in the level 2 as well?
Well, they record it. Sometimes they trade overnight and a big block happens and they get reported the next day and you don't get to see it during the action of the day. But they're not as common as people think they are. It's usually an institution comes in and starts to position himself over a period of days and sometimes weeks into a stock. And you'll see it at the action. Peter, I appreciate the call.
Thank you, Steve.
Good question. Thank you very much.
Here are the directions for reaching Steve this afternoon with your question. Just call 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T. Have a question about how best to get into the market? Or maybe you're feeling unsure about your current investments. That's what this is all about. This is Invest Talk.
Let's go to Cherie in Fremont.
Hey, Justin. How are you?
Doing well. What can you do for you?
Okay, if you noticed last couple of days, biotech seems to be taking off.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think, first question is, do you think market is kind of turning around now after about 2 years biotechs are becoming alive? And if it is so, do you think it's time to rotate the portfolio towards biotech? And if you think that way, then how you go about doing that?
I actually don't think that. I think the recent move has more to do with the bill in the House that Trump's trying to pass around reducing regulations around the drug industry. So that's one of the reasons why this sector has gotten a little boost recently. But if you look technically and fundamentally, both look weak. You know, the peak in biotechs were mid-2015. You had a low, recent low in the beginning of 2016. And sure, it's rallied some, but it hasn't rallied too dramatically, the whole sector overall. And you haven't come close back to the 2015 highs. And if you look at typically the biotech space in general is void of earnings, and especially after this recent run, the values are not very good. So are there select companies that could be good? Sure. But the sector overall, I'm just not a fan of. So no, I'm not a buyer of biotech here.
I mean, in this situation, instead of individual companies, how about looking at biotech ETFs? Is that a prudent thing to do?
Certainly, that'll give you more diversification, but I think this is just diversifying yourself to a sector that is ripe to probably have another drop. When that is, I'm not sure, but I'm sure it'll probably be in conjunction with the overall tech sector, right? Because most of these companies are listed on the NASDAQ, and when the tech sector gets hit, biotech tends to get hit as well, and I think you're likely going to see that whenever the whole tech sector takes a dump. So I think, no, I wouldn't be buying the biotech ETF. It's so one way to play it, but not the way I would play it. So I would stay away from it, Shereen. Now, do you know how much risk you're taking right now with your retirement portfolio? Take the first step to find out. Why not take the test, our free risk analysis tool. It's there for you for free on investtalk.com. Andy is holding in Dublin. And then we'll talk to you. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues. First, a couple of words for KPP Financial and their new Disciplined Equity Program. This is an addition to KPP's select investment programs, and it raises expectations. It targets focused growth for maximum returns. This strategy offers consistent exposure to the equity markets by focusing on only high-quality companies. And although the portfolio is concentrated, it limits exposure to any one sector of the market. Check it out if you're interested. Click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com or click on Contact Steve and he'll gladly fill you in about it. As with all of KPP's programs, a KPP financial principal is personally invested right alongside their clients. This is parallel investing, and it's your assurance of optimum care and diligence. The new Disciplined Equity Program from KPP Financial. Now let's get back to the podcast.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART is our number, everybody. You can reach us. We have lines open, 888-992-4278. How are you doing, Richard?
Today my question is on investing or planning college for my son.
Okay.
I had a thought, if I invest in a 529, mm-hmm. What if at the point he's going to go to college, he decides he doesn't want to go? What do I do with the money then?
Or very, very good question.
Should I invest in something different to give him that option when he becomes that age?
Let's talk about a 529 plan, because I know a lot of people may not know what that is. Each state puts together what's called a 529 plan. Not every state has one. It is a plan for college education. College education. I stress college because it's only can be used for college and an accredited college. The 529 plan, you put money in. You can put quite a bit. I don't remember the amount. Richard, do you happen to know?
Per year?
Yeah.
Or to start it out with?
Per year. What's a maximum you can put in it? It's in the thousands of dollars.
Yeah, it's a few thousand, somewhere there.
But the problem that Richard's asking, and this is the problem, you set up a 529 program for your child to go to college, and then when he's 18, he decides he doesn't want to go to college. A 529 plan can only be used for college. You can't use it for anything else. What you can do at that point is roll it over to another child or another adult. You could use it for your college if you want to go back to school. If you don't, you're going to get taxed and penalty if you take it out of the 529 program and not use it for college.
Okay.
Find out before you started what that tax and penalty. If you have two children, you can set up two, and if one doesn't go, roll the other one into, I mean, somehow you got to roll it.
Right. He's a single child, so.
Then you got an issue there. What if he doesn't?
What other investments would be equivalent to a 529 that I could get into for him?
That is a good alternative. A 529 plan usually has limits. The good thing about the 529 is you get the tax write-off, okay?
Right.
Now, you can also do a Coverdell, which is an education IRA for your child. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a little bit more flexible, but you can't put as much money in it. I think it's $3,000 a year. But a Coverdell can be used for other things other than an approved college. So let's say he wanted to be a truck driver or a hairdresser. You can use that money. Let's say you wanted to use that money for a private high school or elementary school or a middle school. You can use that money.
Okay.
So that gives you a little bit more freedom. And again, you can roll that over to another child because you never know. You maybe have another one. Or a niece or a nephew if you feel extra generous and you have lots of money in 20 years from now. But you still have to use it for education, and you still will get penalized if you use it for something other than education. It's just a lot more flexible.
Okay.
Thanks, Richard. I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Let's go to Sid in Fremont. How you doing, Sid?
I worked for a big bank about a decade ago and had a 401k going with them. So this is about 10 years back. And in the last month, after receiving quarterly statements, et cetera, from them, they pretty much blew out my account and sent me a check for it all.
I don't like that. You know why I don't like that, Sid?
Well, I don't like it either, but what's your reason?
Because it's a distribution of a retirement account to you. How old are you?
41.
See, you're going to get taxed and penalty if you don't immediately put that into an IRA. It's a 401k. Everybody listen up. A 401k is a retirement account. Money is put in there that is pre-taxed. When you leave an employer, my thing is I always tell people don't leave it there because you'll forget about it if it's not very big, or you'll just let it sit there. And they do stuff like this. Here, they sent you a check, and they probably gave you an explanation. They probably sent you form letters you probably threw away because it looked like junk mail. They probably did that. They may not. Maybe they sent it to an old address. But be careful, Sid, because now you have this money in your hand. I would check with my accountant to say, how do I treat this so I don't get a tax problem on this thing? I'm not an expert in accountant. That's why I said it. But I can tell you this. If you cash that money, you're going to get taxed and penalty on it. Because what they did when they send you a check, they notified the government, the IRS.
What if I call the IRS and just say, here, this is what's happened. What should I do?
I would never, ever rely on IRS's information. You know why? Because I did that once and it was totally wrong. Go to a tax guy or an accountant, someone
right.
who knows. Because the IRS will never accept responsibility if they give you wrong information.
I'm thinking of like in a typical retirement account like a Roth IRA, which I have going.
Uh-huh.
My thing is that it's my money, and who has the right, Fidelity or whomever, to just blow out an account and send me a check? Who has the right when it's mine anyway?
Well, they can do that because it is your money, and they say, here, take your money and do something else with it. We don't want it anymore. That's basically what they told you. In effect, by sending you the check. They can do that, but you have to take proper steps to protect yourself at this point. You're going to have to open up or put up an IRA, and not a Roth IRA, by the way, Sid. Can't put in a Roth IRA. It had to be a regular IRA. Because a Roth IRA is set up with pre-tax money. A 401k is after-tax money. You have to keep them separate.
Oh, but can I do a self-directed?
Yes. You can direct it, yes, that IRA, yes.
But it can't be a Roth. It
cannot be a Roth. That's
because
be a regular
I prefer
IRA.
The Roth in general.
Yeah. Sid, I appreciate the call, and good luck with that. Thanks,
Sid. Bye-bye.
Our InvestTalk mission is to help you make better investing decisions. To do that on your own, thumbs up or thumbs down choices based on good, solid investing principles. But we need your questions to keep us on track. 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
Let's go to Chris in San Diego. How are you doing, Chris?
There's a lot of information around, and everybody has differing opinions on when to get into stock and when to get out of a stock, depending on it's moving up and moving down. But what do you do if it doesn't do anything for over a long period of time?
If a stock just sits there like a lump, in other words, dead money, the reasons that you bought the stock are still valid and in place, then you just stick with it. In other words, the reason you bought the stock What was it? Well, it was growing its earnings. It was growing its business. It's got a great new widget that's coming out and it's selling like hotcakes. Whatever the reason was, and if it's a valid reason, making money, and it has not changed, nothing's changed about that decision, then you stay with it. The problem, Chris, is stocks. I don't know if you've ever heard the statistics, but it's amazing that stocks, you know, like 70, 80% of the movement of stocks is like 3% of the time that you're in the stock. Like over a year period, most of the move comes in bunches. And if you're not in it that few days or few weeks that it moves, you've just wasted all your time and effort.
I see.
If the nothing has changed, in other words, no new competitor came out with a better widget to knock this one out, that's called creative destruction, by the way. No new something has destroyed what you bought the stock for. Then you stick with it. I know it's hard sometimes. There is a time when you give up, but that's not for years, not days or weeks or months.
So it's on the order of years.
Yes. If the reason that you bought it still is valid. Now, sometimes the reason you bought it changes.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the question. Thank you. Michael, Half Moon Bay. How you doing, Michael?
Okay. I don't know a whole lot about this subject. So okay. I think it's a pretty good question, though. I worked for a company. I invested in my stock. I bought it outright when I left the company. It's still a privately held company. It has not gone public. But it was just recently purchased by a, I guess the term is a blank check company that's already public. I don't know what that means for me and my stock. I got a letter saying that they were going to purchase my stock back from me. But I was kind of holding out till it goes to common stock. But I'm not sure if I'm capable. It doesn't sound like they're going to let me do that.
No, since it's a private company, it's not a public company, you don't have much say.
Okay.
They're going to buy all the stock. Question in your mind is, what are you going to buy it for? How much?
Well, they made an offer to me, but I'm like, I don't know that if I do I have an opportunity to go back and say, no, I want to sell you it for this much and see what they say.
If your stock has a voting power, do you know if it does?
Voting? I don't think I have enough for a voting power, no.
Yeah, see, most of the voting power is probably held by the insiders, the people who...
Exactly.
Okay, and those guys are going to make the decision. You are not. You're going to have to follow on their coattails. Unfortunately, the option that would be left to you is filing suit as a minority shareholder.
Right.
But you feel like you're getting a shaft, and the majority shareholders are getting the benefits, and you're not.
Right.
That does happen, but it's extremely expensive, and you don't want to go that route.
It's a nice little chunk, and I'm happy, but I had absolutely different plans for that money.
And so they messed it up for you.
Well, I mean, at least something happened with it. It's been a while, you know what I mean?
So yes.
I feel good about that. Now, what would you think about taking some of that money and buying it into the company that just bought?
If you feel that the fundamentals of the company, of the shares that you own, if you feel that's really going to benefit this new company and it's really going to accelerate this new public company's earnings, then yeah, that's a good way to go. If it's so small, the company that stock that you own, if it's like 5% or 10% of the company that's buying it, then it will make no difference. You have to look at the company that's buying it to make sure that they're solid.
Right, right.
So take a look at the relative size and what it really is going to do to their earnings.
Okay.
Well, good luck with it, Michael.
Well, thank you very much. You were very helpful. I appreciate the time.
Thank you for calling.
Our main talking point today is about five things to consider before buying today's hot investments. And certainly we're talking about Amazon and the Googles and the Netflix of the world. And together, the Amazon, Apple, Google, Microsoft, and Netflix are worth $2.4 trillion all on their own, accounting for 13% of the entire American economy. And, you know, you don't have to follow the herd. I know everyone gets FOMO, fear of missing out. And I understand that. Same with Bitcoin, right? Everyone has FOMO, fear of missing out. But when everybody, remember, I've learned this lesson plenty of times. I learned it with the first dot-com bubble. I learned it with the I learned it with the housing bubble in 2007. So I've been there. I've seen it. Steve's seen it. We've all seen it. Okay? And we're in a very similar place today. And Bitcoin is just a perfect example of that. So at the end, you have to ask yourself, though, why, what, and how? Those are the three key questions. Now, the why is, why do you need to own these things? Or why do you want to make more money? Is it to do the things with your family that you want to do? You want to help your kids maybe go to college? Maybe it's just being financially comfortable. Then it's what? What is the way to get there? Right? What is the method that you need to achieve those? Achieve the why. Okay? And if you can create a plan that will get you to that why without taking drastic risk, which buying stocks that are up 200%, buying Bitcoin and Ethereum and all this crap, right? Then why do you need to do it? Why should you do it? Why aren't you learning from the mistakes that other people made in the past? You don't have to learn the hard way. Most people do. Most people need it. But you don't have to. And that's why we do the show, is try to give you some perspective and understand the mistakes that people have made the hard way. So there's nothing wrong with sitting it out and missing out. Because usually when you have peak FOMO, fear of missing out, it's usually the worst time to be in that particular investment. Remember, it's not just about managing your money. It's really managing your emotions. And emotions, that FOMO, is what gets most people in trouble the most. Now, if you have a 401k account, here's a KPP investment program that may make your life a little easier and less stressful. It's our active 401k program. This is a new system that can help meet a serious challenge for the average investor. How to make informed choices within the limits of your employer 401k plan. If you'd like to know more about it, just go to investtalk.com. Click on the investments tab. Look for active 401k. Let's go to Goal in Fremont. How are you doing, Goal?
Hi, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing great. What can you do for you?
I have a question on the strategy. See your comments on the approach.
Okay.
I'm in the market to buy a house, and I wanted to think about minimizing my down payment, even though I can afford more, and using that 3% mortgage rate to invest in the market and assume that I can get better than 3% in the market. Is that a good strategy, or pay the amount and call it a day?
Well, the first question is, what type of investor are you? Are you aggressive, conservative, moderate?
Aggressive.
You're aggressive. Okay. Well, the aggressive thing would do is to limit that down payment and put more in the market. That would be aggressive.
Yeah.
Are you close to or near retirement?
Yes, I'm 63.
You're 63. Well, when you're 63, you should probably be more conservative. Have you ever had a financial plan laid out for you?
Yes, I have.
Okay. And are you on track for that?
Yes. Okay. I've beaten the track.
Okay. So you've beaten the track. See, one of the risks, and this is why we don't like to, a KPP, we don't like to box people in based on age, of what type of investments they should make, or box them in based on risk tolerance of what type of investments they should make, okay? So there's a lot of people who are older and can handle risk, but the big question is, do you need to take more risk? And it sounds like, based on your financial plan, no, you don't. So why would you take more risk to achieve what? What are you achieving? It's just for your own ego to say, oh, I earned an extra 2 or 3 or 4 or 5% on my investments? No. You've saved enough money. You have enough money. Even though you're willing to take more risk, the answer, that question is, should you? And the answer is no, because you have enough. You're only risking your own financial security. So I would say, do the more conservative thing, pay more towards that home, and not invest in the market. So I would put more of a down payment. Thanks, Goal. You're listening to InvestTalk. We'd love to hear from you before the hour is up at 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Let's go to Jackson in Sunnyvale. How are you doing, Jackson?
Hey, Justin. Thanks for the call. Love your show. Great. Great show today, too. I like hearing about technical analysis, et cetera. But I have a question for you. I'm not feeling this market. I know feeling is not something you use when you trade technically. Mm-hmm. But it just seems like it's so overvalued. There's just so much smoke and mirrors going on. There's so much QE since the last meltdown. We're still at ZIRP or near ZIRP, which I think is the only thing that's propping up the residential housing market personally. And my question to you is, where, and I know this is a classic question, where are you and your company parking cash short term right now?
Well, we do have an elevated level of cash. I mean, that's certainly always sitting in money market. We did talk today a little bit in our balanced income program about going a little bit heavier in fixed income. Because we do have some cash there that needs to be producing some better yields than money market, even though that's not zero anymore, but it's still, you know, under 1%. And so we talked a little bit about that. So high grade corporate bonds to us is the in the medium term, you know, 3 to 5 year duration is where we're kind of putting the most cash to work. We certainly are finding some values in, we call it baby being thrown out the bathwater in the retail sector. So we found a few names right in there that we like. But overall, the best place that we're finding opportunities is that high-grade corporate bond market.
And that's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm kind of in the shorter-term corporate mm-hmm. bond market.
Yep.
Just because, I'm still skittish about it. I mean, it just seems like nobody really knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
As Fed goes, who knows what's going on behind the curtain there.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts on short-term versus intermediate-term bonds? Right now? I mean, it's safer right now at this point with rate, possible rate hikes on the horizon to kind of steer more towards shorter-term?
I don't think a risk of interest rates rising dramatically over the next 5 to 7 years is high because of slow economic growth. You have certainly demographic issues that are in play along with slow productivity. So I don't think we're going to hit like a hyperinflationary environment. So, and you're going to get a solidly better yields for intermediate term versus short term. So we like more intermediate term. So, 5 to 7 years is a good range to be buying corporate bonds.
Or three to five, you mean?
Or 3 to 5, 3 to 7, you know, somewhere. Depends on
3 to 7.
Yeah. What depends on what you're getting at 7. You know, you're going to get a fatter, juicy
sure.
yield off of that. Oh, we'll go 7. If it's only a minor difference, then we'll probably go a little bit shorter.
But you guys are staying in high grade. You're not venturing
yeah.
off into the.
No, we might dip into very high junk, you know, BB+ type of thing, but that's as low as we'll go. Thanks, Jackson.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Lisa in San Francisco. How are you doing, Lisa?
Yes, hi. Thank you. So I wonder if you can give me some insight as to why the small caps have been struggling as compared to the other sectors.
They're usually kind of the canary in the coal mine. So they typically do underperform when the market is kind of getting tired. Valuations there are certainly very, very stretched. The underlying earnings trends aren't as good. The corporate bond market is kind of slowing down a little bit, so the small cap names tend to get hit when liquidity is starting to dry up a little bit. So there's a lot of reasons why I think small caps are lagging, but I do think I'm not a fan of small caps overall.
Okay, that's good to know. I was thinking about transferring money into it from international, but it doesn't sound like it would be the good time to do it.
Yeah, I think international is definitely the best area of the marketplace right now in general. Now, certainly you can argue which countries are better, which areas of international are better, but certainly the better values are being found overseas versus here domestically in general. Thanks for the call, Lisa. Time is up for the hour. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for being with us. Let's meet up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.